listening to Raised in Wisco with Joel Clapish and, yes, the chooser of the music, very clearly,
that is Halloween
Danielle
weekend.
Fairman is with us here. It is Halloween weekend, and there's my mom.
Hi, Mom.
Right on cue, she's showing up to listen
you,
to
Anya.
Us in the studio. My mom brings me, like, she finds, like, drinks that I like Vita
Mom's
Ice.
Socks. And, see, Mom should have listened to it. She is wearing
She brings, like,
pants.
Vita Ice and Bubbler, which is my favorite drink for the field. Wisconsin company, by the way, Seltzers. Man, no idea. I'm telling you right now.
What are you telling me?
We talk about it on the show. If you do not believe that there is some kind of divine providence that goes on in this world, you are crazy. I had the most incredible week ever. I mean, traveling to hunt, as you know, is one of my favorite things
yes,
in the world to do. And
all
I love it. So I went out to Wyoming. And I'm in Wyoming. I have a mule deer tag. Went out with John then, who's been a guest on the show. He's got 10,000 acres out there. I thought to myself, 10,000 acres? That's like huge. There's got to be 8 million mule deer on that. But if you go to Wyoming, 10,000 acres is like the head of a pin.
I'm
not even joking.
Wow.
It's so tiny compared to the big sky and the big land out there. And we chased mule deer around. And I ended up getting a mule deer, a modest mule deer. I'm very happy. It was my first one. It was a nice buck.
Exciting.
Nothing huge. Nothing giant, not a Boone and Crockett or anything like that, but it was great. Fantastic time. Most beautiful, one of the most beautiful states I've ever seen.
I would love to
if
retire
not
in Wyoming.
The most beautiful state I have ever seen.
Oh, yes.
And then I had a pronghorn antelope tag for about 3 hours away in Bighorn, near Bighorn, Gillette, Wyoming. And I had nobody to hunt with. I was completely and totally freelancing.
You could have went with my nephew.
Well,
they live in Buffalo.
Yeah, but
and
how
they go
do
right
you know? How do you know that it's the right zone? I mean, there's like 100
no
zones, right? So I literally, I'm going. What? So what do? You go to bars and gas stations,
yeah,
and start asking people. I start asking people at bars and gas stations. Do you know anyone in Zone 23 who might have?
23.
It was Zone 23, and it was a private land tag. So I not only did I have to find Zone 23, I had to find private land in Zone 23.
Sheesh.
So I get through this series of folks. I get a number to a guy named Toby Johnson. I call Toby Johnson. Toby ends up being a 76-year-old man who's hunted his entire life, run an outfitter out there, semi-retired. And I'm talking to him on the phone. He's like, you know, I don't really have much time. I'm going to England to hunt muntjac and Chinese water deer.
Oh, that was a perfect conversation for you. That was so perfect.
There's not a coincidence. If I could have this much
luck
in the
lottery, it's like finding your second cousin again.
I would be a millionaire. So I said to Toby, so he says, look, come on out. I'll take you pronghorn antelope hunting. You help me with England. He had a friend who was going to set up their England trip. His friend's wife died, and the trip never got set up, but he still had the plane tickets. So I got him set up with an outfitter out there to hunt Chinese water deer and muntjac. I got him an Airbnb. I hunted with him and got to listen to the stories of the 76-year-old man who has hunted his whole life in Wyoming. Hundreds of pronghorn, mule deer, moose,
that sounds perfect.
Elk, bears. I just had the time of my life. What are the odds? Then he's like, well, I got a friend of mine. He's hunting here. You know, you'll meet him. I go and I walk and I meet Matthew Bargander is the guy's name. He looks at me. He says, are you Joel Clayfish?
What?
I said, what? How the heck do you know? How on earth do you know that? He said, I'm from Wausau in the middle of Wyoming. I'm from Wausau. I follow your hunting and stuff and I like your wife. And I mean, that is not... That's crazy, right, Anya?
Every time you go somewhere, there's someone from Wausau except for Wausau. Why is everyone from Wausau not where they're supposed to be, including me? Why am I here?
You're from Wausau.
I am,
For goodness sake. And you're
That's
here
why.
In Waukesha.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because it starts with W-A-U and Wyoming starts with a W. I don't know.
I think we're drawn to the W's. Yeah. The mountains of home, the W's.
Anyway, it was such an incredible experience. And to have that kind of serendipity happen. And so segments 2 and 3 of the show are going to be interviews with Toby Johnson and Matthew Bargander.
Sweet.
And it's going to be fantastic. But before we get to that, I have to just say this. I get home. The day I got home at 2:30 in the morning, stayed up till like 4:30 in the morning cutting up the antelope because it was fresh, you know.
Ooh,
I mean, it was never
delicious.
Frozen. And then I get like a couple hours of sleep. And Garth Alston, one of my bosses for our client, but to say he's a boss is kind of silly because he's actually a very dear friend of mine. He says, hey, I got an opportunity to hunt on a little marsh inlet in one of the Dane County lakes in Madison for ducks. So I said, oh my gosh, yes. When? He says, tomorrow. Can you be out here at, you know, like 5:45 in the morning up at 3:30? I said, absolutely. So I go with Garth. Now here's the beauty of this. Garth is setting up this hunt, right, for us, but Garth has never killed a duck in his life.
What?
So we're in the blind. And it's the most glorious sunrise I've ever seen in my life.
Of course.
Beautiful. And all of a sudden, we see like a Drake mallard, and it's coming to the decoys. And we're excited. You know, your blood starts pumping. Your heart starts going. And we're there with Paul, his buddy Paul, who actually owned the property where we hunted.
Yeah.
And we're in the blind, and this thing swings around, and we all unload. You know, I would say 8 of our 9 shots trying to hit this duck, and we all miss. And Garth, who's never shot a duck before in his life, swings and on his third shot, smokes it.
Yes.
And it is a fully plumed, Cheeto-feeted, bright orange, thick-necked Drake mallard, like, and there's not a drop of blood on it. It might have died of a heart attack because this was the most pristine duck. And then Paul and I looked at him and said, you better get this thing mounted. And I think he's going to get it mounted. So, Garth, what an awesome hunt. Always great to hang out in the woods with you. A pleasure. And that was just, I mean, so that was my week. I mean, what the heck?
Sounds like a great week for you.
Yeah, it was awesome. And you guys did a great job, you and Kretschmer.
Well, that was a great show.
Yeah, he's a character, isn't he?
He is, but a good character. Not one of those bad ones.
I've known him for a long time now. And he's not the little guy I started hunting with a million years ago. But we're going to get into our guest right away because you're going to meet him. And then we're going to talk to him in the last segment of the show. Cassidy Lederbach is joining us. And Danielle, this is Cassidy. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good to be here.
If you see Cassidy, you immediately think military. That's what I thought when I met him right away. And of course,
not a bad thing.
Semper Fi, Devil Dog, Jarhead, you were a member of the Marines, so we thank you for that.
Yes, thank you.
Appreciate your service. And now you're a Wisconsinite who, through an awesome story of Danielle, ended up meeting and being a guest on the show, and you're into the predator hunting. I saw that setup. I don't think I've ever seen a setup like that.
You start from the very bottom, you know, with a green flashlight if you're lucky, and
I started with a green flashlight for hogs.
I have no idea what you guys are talking about.
You have to light up the night because you can't see.
So
before you
that
start
makes so
with
much sense.
Vision scopes, you got to light it up with something. And predators and hogs don't see green or red as well. So you hunt with a light so you can see at the point of kill.
We first started just doing it at twilight and hoping we got them in before it got too dark.
Yeah.
And then we're like, there's got to be a better way. And it was, let's try these flashlights. And then from flashlights, it was, let's try some of this this cheaper IR night vision stuff you can get for $40. And
ooh, I could do that.
It was better than being in the dark. But it wasn't great.
Not a lot.
It wasn't great. And then you move on and you get an even better IR where you can see even further and, you know, lights up more of the field or whatever. And then
the one you have now is like a freaking baseball bat on top of your...
It's a thermal.
Yep. It is sweet looking. I have to pull that picture.
What kind of thermal are you running on there?
That's a Pulsar Thermion 2. Oh my God. Picture in picture, records in 4K.
What?
Yeah, digital.
What?
Digital zoom.
Yeah. They have? That's a thing?
What gun are you running under that?
Black Rain Ordnance 5.56 with a Yankee Hill suppressor.
What did you start with? Like in the way back in the day, what did you start with?
My DPMS Oracle 5.56.
Oh.
He started with an AR-15. AR-15. You don't need to. You can start with a .22 .250, a .243.
So the two guns that I own is Magnum. I have a 20 gauge and a 12 gauge. That's all I got right now.
Well,
right now.
You can start with, right, you know now. What? Start with a 12 gauge and buckshot. You can hunt coyotes with buckshot.
Number four buck.
Yep. Yeah.
Number four buck.
Number four buckshot.
Or my arrow.
Or that.
That'd be sweet.
That'd be really sweet.
Yeah.
Okay, continue with your awesome gun story, because I don't know anything about these guns.
Oh, just standard AR platform. And once you work your way up and you find love for it, you'll find more ways to put more money into it, obviously.
Hunting can be the black hole of extra money. Or money you don't have.
That's what that credit card's for, right?
If my wife is listening, I don't ever spend money I don't have anymore or any less.
Tell her you want a Pulsar for Christmas.
Oh, believe me.
Oh, what?
If I got a Pulsar or one of the ATN, thermals, I mean, those things cost more than the gun, substantially more in most cases. They start at like $4,000 and go up to like $10,000. So that is definitely. But I'll tell you, the quality difference between the basic IR stuff, infrared stuff versus thermal, does make a difference. I hunt hogs with IR, with the ATN IR, and if you're sitting on a bait pile, they're fine. They're just fine for it. But once you start taking longer distance shots and trying to, making sure you're shooting at a coyote and not the neighbor's dog or a deer in the middle of the night. I mean, it's tough to tell. And some of the thermals some of the cheaper thermals that aren't giving you a real crisp image, it's tough to tell what you're aiming at sometimes.
Yeah, it'll just look a orange or red, depending on the color setting, just like a blob.
Man, you should have brought that here. I should have looked through it.
Yeah.
I have never experienced. I've always wanted to go coyote hunting. Always.
Well, let's go.
I'm down to go. The one time I had a coyote come out in front of me during turkey season, I put a shell in there, and all of a sudden, click, nothing. All right, well, that coyote just saw me move. He's still chilling there, hanging out, and then all of a sudden, I put another round in, click, take out both of them. It's just a pin, right? Like a dot right inside of the firing pin. Like it never even shot. Brand new box of ammo.
Light primer strikes.
I was super upset. I'm like, okay, I could have got my first coyote, but nope, not happening. So I would absolutely love to go coyote hunting again.
All right. And that fast, Cassie's going to be back with us in the last block. We're going to get some secrets of coyote hunting from him. In the meantime, here's some interviews from Wyoming and my awesome mule and antelope hunt out there. We'll be right back on 540 AM double.
Where are we?
AUK. Used to be 1510, 540 AM. I ain't afraid of no ghosts.
Hey, Anastasia, this is our remote segment in 3, 2. Welcome back to Raised in Whisper. I'm your host, Joel Clayfish. Across the country, outside the fishbowl in Wyoming, it's unbelievable. You're listening to the show on 540 AM WAUK and everywhere you get your civic media stations throughout the great state of Wisconsin. On this show, I talk a lot. about getting outside the box. Look, Wisconsin is an unbelievable state to do outdoor activities, fishing, hunting, hiking, canoeing. If you want to get in those sideways bananas, the car they call kayaks, go ahead and do that. That's not for me because I'm a little bit top heavy for that. We're in the middle of turkey season, deer season in Wisconsin. The rut's about to start up. The turkeys are already finding their way into the combine cornfields, and ducks and geese is in full swing. But I was fortunate enough to draw a mule deer tag and head out to the great state of Wyoming. And I have to confess, I've been to a lot of states in these great United States, but I've never been to Wyoming. And I went out with a mule deer tag, and the only antelope, pronghorn antelope tag I was able to get was in a unit called Unit 23. What does that mean to you as a listener? Not much, but it's a specific area of Wyoming. So I kind of renegated it. I got out to Wyoming, hunted with a friend, John Then, who's been on the show before. We talked about mule deer hunting last time he was in, and I was able to get out there and get my first mule deer. It was unbelievable. This portion of the broadcast is coming to you from Wyoming. We are near in between the Ten Sleep and Billings kind of area, Billings, Montana to the north, Ten Sleep to the west, and we found ourselves here with Toby Johnson. Toby Johnson, a spry young man at the age of 76, was kind enough. I literally went to bars and gas stations and asked around, and I wanted to see if anybody knew anyone in Area 23 that I could possibly hunt a pronghorn antelope. I was directed to a man who I had never met before. And one of the greatest joys in my life and one of the greatest joys of being a hunter is that the hunting community will help you out in a pinch. I got to talking to him, and despite my garlic personality, Toby was kind enough to invite me literally to his home. And so I went to Big Horn, Wyoming, and met a man named Toby Johnson, who has been hunting antelope in this area for the better part of 7 decades. And it has been an experience that is indescribable. This man has traveled the world, hunted species that I've never heard of before. Beyond that, he is a kind and generous person, and we got to spend time with him at his hunt camp and head out. And lo and behold, I was able to harvest a beautiful pronghorn antelope yesterday, and I'm sure we're going to get into the story of that. Toby, what a joy it is to have you on the show, and thank you so much for the fantastic experience. Your life, it's a book. It is absolutely a book. How did it come to be? How did you get to be who you are and do what you've done throughout your life?
Well, I guess I've been pretty fortunate to do what I've done throughout my life. I feel fortunate. I wouldn't trade it for anything. I just here and enjoy hunting.
Well, enjoying hunting is the biggest understatement you could ever say. This man has the Grand Slam of North American sheep. He has the World Slam of sheep, and he does taxidermy himself, and he's got animals that range the gamut from every corner of this world. And spending the time I got to spend with him in the truck yesterday and speaking with him this morning, I have a feeling I've only heard a very small fraction of the stories. But what does it do for you as a person? What does it give you as a person to give back in the way you do? Because I can't imagine the people who come and hunt for their very first time with you, who experienced the outdoors in a way that they didn't know existed. What does that feel like to you?
Well, obviously I enjoy hunting, and I enjoy sharing it with other people, particularly young people. Right now in my life, I'd probably rather hunt with my kids than anybody else. But, you know, I enjoy hunting, and being along in the hunts is, you know, fun for me, still fun for me.
Yeah. When we were driving yesterday up through the plains of Wyoming, just past and outside the Bighorn Mountains, this guy, first of all, he can spot antelope on the plains like, I mean, nobody else sees him before Toby sees him, and he lights up. You light up now, I would imagine, just as much as you ever did when you see a group of antelope out there.
Well, I think I do. I hope I still do. I still get excited, you know. And I tell people when that feeling leaves, it's time to get out, because that is what it is about. It is about that feeling of the pursuit and the potential that exists. And if they call, and if it was a guarantee, it'd be called shopping, not hunting.
Right.
You know, I've been here a couple of days and we're staying literally with Toby, which has been a blessing. The food's unbelievable. The beauty of the surrounding mountains and the plains is unbelievable. We are here with Matthew Bargander. I met him, another guy from Wisconsin, if you can even believe that. And Matthew's out here with his nephew, Braden Sullivan. And Braden's sitting right next to me. And he's never killed a big game animal in his life. And he's been coming along. He came along on the antelope hunt yesterday. Braden, what is it like? There's nothing more exciting to me than seeing, and two of the other folks here, one's got his 15-year-old daughter, one's got his 12-year-old son. This is the future generation, getting them off the 3x7s, getting out into the wilderness and seeing what exists and what the possibilities are. And you're out here with a white-tailed doe tag, right? Yep. Something you might even be able to do in Wisconsin. How does it feel to actually be able to have this scenery, meet these people, have this kind of experience, and just, you're out for a doe. A lot of people say, oh, that's not a big trophy. But to you, who've never harvested anything in your life, you get to watch these other hunts go on. You see the pronghorn. What's it been like for you, and how have you enjoyed it so far? And what are you looking forward to?
I think it's been a great learning experience. And like you've said, you wouldn't want to say you didn't do something on your deathbed. I think it's been great being out here, learning all these from knowledgeable people such as Toby. And we really just, I'm excited to go out with you guys. And it's the adrenaline. Like you say, when you're out there looking for the pronghorn, you're the bucks or anything, you see them out there and you spot them. It's the adrenaline when you know you're walking up to them, sneaking up on them. You don't even have to necessarily get them. It's just that rush of being out there with everybody and knowing the camaraderie is with us and that we're just all together having fun.
What would you say to somebody who has never gone on a hunting experience, who's maybe kind of like you, who's never actually had a real big game hunting experience, and they have apprehension about it? What would you tell somebody as to what they should do or if they should try it?
I would say, regardless of if you're being out there because you want to hunt or if you're being out there because someone dragged you out there, I think that you're going to have a good time. And I think that you should really be in one with nature and just enjoy the time that you have out there. And I think that being out and just seeing the wild nature the way you wouldn't see it any other way is something beautiful. And regardless of if you're pulling the trigger or not, I think that it's a beautiful time to be out there and see nature the way it is presented, not through a camera, through your own eyes.
And you never know what you're going to see here. I mean, one day...
lab late one night when my eyes beheld
with a white tailed goat, right? For my monster, something you might even be able to do in Wisconsin. How does it feel to actually be able to have this scenery, meet these people, have this kind of experience, and just you're out for a dough? A lot of people say, oh, that's not a big trophy. But to you, who've never harvested anything in your life, you get to watch these other hunts go on. You see the pronghorn. What's it been like for you, and how have you enjoyed it so far? And what are you looking forward to?
I think it's been a great learning experience. And like you've said, you wouldn't want to say you didn't do something on your deathbed. I think it's been great being out here learning all these from knowledgeable people such as Toby. And we really just, I'm excited to go out with you guys. And it's the adrenaline, like you say, when you're out there looking for the pronghorn, you're the bucks or anything, you see them out there and you spot them. It's the adrenaline when you know you're walking up to them, sneaking up on them. You don't even have to necessarily get them. It's just that rush of being out there with everybody and knowing the camaraderie is with us and that we're just all together having fun.
What would you say to somebody who has never gone on a hunting experience, who's maybe kind of like you, who's never actually had a real big game hunting experience, and they have apprehension about it? What would you tell somebody as to what they should do or if they should try it?
I would say, regardless of if you're being out there because you want to hunt or if you're being out there because someone dragged you out there, I think that you're going to have a good time, and I think that you should really be in one with nature and just enjoy the time that you have out there. And I think that being out and just seeing the wild nature the way you wouldn't see it any other way is something beautiful. And regardless of if you're pulling the trigger or not, I think that it's a beautiful time to be out there and see nature the way it is presented, not through a camera, through your own eyes.
And you never know what you're going to see here. I mean, one day in the Bighorn Mountains, Toby Johnson's son was out, saw bear tracks, moose tracks, elk tracks, I think lion tracks too, and lion tracks. So Uncle Matthew, Bargander from Wisconsin, from the great state of Wisconsin, we get here, we're in the middle of Wyoming. Turns out he and I are almost close friends because we have so many friends in common from back home. But what drew you out here and what made you bring your nephew along for his first hunt?
So I've been coming out here for a few years now. And, you know, Toby's a kind of world-class guy in terms of hunting and everything that, you know, he's accomplished in that. And, you know, it's always wanted to get into it. And it's just access. A lot of the times it's just finding people. And I've got young kids too. I've got two young boys and I want them to, you know, get to the point where obviously they have an interest in hunting, but they're a little too young. But, it's life. It's an experience. It's not, men especially, and I don't want to hyper focus on it, but men want to seek adventure. It's what we want to do. It's inherent in us. You know, that's kind of our nature. And where that comes into is introducing our kids into it and stuff. I mean, we spend a lot of time, my wife and I and kids, we're out west a lot. my son's 5 years old. He's been in Yellowstone 7 times.
You know, 90% of the people in the United States will never see this country. They will never see Wyoming. 90% of the people in the United States. I have never seen such beauty. And the pictures are beautiful, but it does not translate onto a photograph. What you see here and what you can potentially see when you're out hunting. I think you hit on something that is very important. Mankind has a desire to seek out their own fortune and to seek out their own sustenance. And you can do that here. We rely out here on the importance of harvesting game that's going to end up on a table. That's very important to me. That's very important to the show. It's very important to what the provider does, making things taste good. And now we've got unlimited resources to be able to do that. You know, I want to talk a little bit about yesterday's hunt, because many of you who listen to the show know that I am certainly not averse to making fun of myself. And I do consider myself, under most circumstances, a halfway decent shot. But yesterday, this goes back to Toby. Toby, I have to tell, I think if you lose the excitement, you've lost the main reason to be out there, because watching the woods wake up and being out there when there's game moving. And we saw the biggest antelope of the day, and Toby spotted it. And he said, I think there's one right there, about 100 yards from the truck in the front. And I got out and I went to put a shot on it, a fairly close shot. put my bag down. And Toby, what happened? Because I'm telling you what, I have taken baloney about it for the last 2 days now.
Well, I think he missed. That's what happened.
You think I missed or I missed?
Not once, but twice.
Oh, my gosh. This thing was right in front of me. And I will, sure, you go through that period of beating yourself up, right? Everybody does. But I do think it's something important to talk about on the show. And, you know, you're somebody who's taken some people hunting for decades. Even the best hunters miss. Do they not? Have you ever missed?
More times than I can remember. If you haven't missed, you haven't hunted.
That's true. And I think that that is kind of a lesson for the folks who are brand new or veterans out there. I beat myself up yesterday when I missed. And I'm going to tell you, I have no excuse for missing. But what I will say is I probably rushed the shot. And that was based on my excitement about being there and seeing that beautiful animal in front of me. And that is also something I think hunting teaches you. It teaches you that making sure you're in a good headspace when you do something is important. And so you learn the lesson of not rushing, being sure of your shot. I missed twice, and that antelope trotted off. And I think he even looked back and was laughing and flipped me the bird, to be honest with you. I'm pretty sure he did. But then pretty soon he was about a mile away and there was no catching up to him. And then as it would turn out, we had a second opportunity because I wouldn't be going home with meat in the cooler to do the cooking segments if we didn't have that second opportunity. Do you think there's a lesson in everything like that, Toby?
I think so. I hope there's a lesson in everything that we do.
Well, that's well said. That is well said. And the lesson, the things I learned just in the last day, I don't believe in coincidences. You know, I talk about it on the show. I think God inspires what happens in our lives to a large extent. And the fact that I literally started talking to people and was directed to a man who's 3 hours from where I was hunting and where I was in Wyoming. And 3 hours is nothing. Let me be clear. 3 hours away is nothing in this big state. And got to spend time with him here, talked with him, literally got back from England. We've talked about the muntjac hunting, and that's one of the places Toby's going to go. And I meet Matthew here. And Matthew, you know, you don't believe in coincidences either. What are the chances that we're going to have these friends and people in common and essentially know who each other are out of just me trying to find a place to fill my antelope tag? Doesn't that kind of blow your mind?
You know, it happens a lot.
So it really does.
You know, you just take it in strides and just accept for what it is, you know. And I think yesterday, I knew that Toby's got a collection. A collection of a trophy building, and you know, you had no idea. And I'm just sitting in the back of the truck, smugly sitting back there, you know, just wait till later. And we walk in there last night and you're just like, whoa, you know, I mean, it's not, you know, some people can kind of scoff at it and say, wow, that's just terrible. That's just, you know, those poor animals. You know, there's different perspectives on that. I mean, you're not going to, you know, then we should get rid of zoos and we should get rid of the Smithsonian because it's education even from that fact. I mean,
every one of those mounts has a story.
Yeah.
Every one of those animals Toby's harvested has a story,
yeah.
Has provided food, has a memory and a life experience behind it. And that, it was right at first information overload, and I almost kind of wanted to sleep in there and try to absorb it through osmosis because you get to say, here's a man who has spent his life literally experiencing life, not watching it on his phone, not watching it on Netflix. He has been out there traveling the world and having these experiences, and you guys listen to me talk about it on the show so often. Get outside side and have the experiences. You will never regret it. And it doesn't have to be an expensive experience. You can bother your buddy till he takes you to a duck blind. You can bug him to help you out with a recipe. And we're literally sitting around a table with essentially four generations right here. Toby, you know, is the oldest generation. I'm the next generation after him, then Matthew, and now you're bringing your nephew, Braden, into it. And that is exactly what we're trying to do in the state of Wisconsin, and shows like Raised in Wisco, and shows like The Foul Life and The Provider, is to show people that getting off your duff is absolutely worth it. Look, I went out and missed yesterday. I shot twice and missed a real trophy antelope. And you know what? The tenderloins on the one I shot look as beautiful as the one I missed. And they're going to make some absolutely delicious food. And the animals are beautiful. And it, to me, is a trophy. So, and Braden here, he's heading out to hunt a doe, a white-tailed doe. And that's going to be a massive trophy to him. So does it give you some kind of influence or feeling, or to be able to be in the presence of somebody who's literally done it for all, you know, nearly a century, and everybody in between?
The best way I can say it is just awestruck at the sheer beauty and just volume of things this man has been capable of doing in one lifetime. I mean, it's the sheer quantity of things one man is able to achieve is beautiful, really. That's all I can say, is it's awestruck and beautiful what he's achieved. And it's great learning this knowledge. Any little tidbit of knowledge is just a blessing.
And I'll tell you, I can't wait, because now we're all connected. We've traded numbers. We've made new friends. And I can tell you from this experience, I will know Toby the rest of my life. I will now know Matthew. I'm trying to drag him down and get him in a waterfowl blind, because he doesn't know what he's missing.
Yeah, I'm good.
No, you're not. You're going to eat goose and love it. You're going to eat goose and like it. I'm telling you. I promise you that. But this has just been a really neat kind of escape from the fishbowl to Wyoming. And I'm really glad I got to do this segment remote from Wyoming. I really want to thank Toby. We could literally talk to him for hours, and we would not scratch the surface of his life experiences. His generosity, his kindness, the beauty of this town that he lives in, and getting here and getting home. And it'll be a joy and a comfort to get back home to my family in Wisconsin. But we want to, you know, thank all you guys for listening to the show. And Civic Media now has it on throughout the state of Wisconsin. Anywhere you live, you can listen to it on your Civic Media station. And remember, being excited about Wisconsin, the outdoors, conservation, hunting for your own food, the responsibility of understanding that is what it is about to be an outdoorsman. But remember, being an outdoorsman is a wide gamut. Whether you have an hour a week to get out and enjoy the conservation of the great state of Wisconsin or another state in these great United States, or you do it 3 days a week or 5 days a week, remember, God put this earth here for us to utilize it to his glory. So please do that. Enjoy it. We'll be right back after this break. You're listening to Raised in Wisco with Joel Clayfish and Danielle Fairman. We'll be right back.
He always, always, always has a way of putting things that makes you feel inspired, doesn't he, though? And I say it because Joel is hanging out and I'm taking over back in the host seat. I love being in the host seat. I feel very powerful over here. But Wyoming, have you ever been to Wyoming?
I have not.
It's on the bucket list.
Yeah.
Is it for prockhorn, antelope?
Anything.
Mule deer?
I mean, even like the prairie dogs. Go out there, shoot a bunch of prairie dogs.
Oh, I didn't think about the prairie dogs.
Yeah.
You could bring your sweet.
My sweet rifle.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Rifle. I was going to call it rifle because I have no idea what you call it. What was it? What kind of rifle is that?
It's just the AR-15.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh. And just like that, we're ending the show. When we get back, we're going to be talking about more Wyoming and your inspiration for the children out there, new hunters and everything, and our awesome story of how we met.
Perfect.
So perfect. You listen to Raised in Wisco. I'm Danielle Fairman, alongside Cassidy, alongside Joel and his mom and Anya and everybody here. Love it.
Dracula and his son. The scene was rocking all the
in Wisco. I'm your host, Joel Clayfish, alongside Danielle Fairman and Cassidy Lederbach today. Boy, so you got a little bit of a feel of what that was like to be out there in Wyoming. And
sounds like a dream hunt.
Man, I've never been on a hunt that hasn't been a dream hunt, really. Even when you don't harvest something.
Yeah.
To be able to be out in the great outdoors and experience, you know, sunrises and sunsets from different corners of this fantastic planet, unless you believe in flat earth, different places on this disc that we're floating in the middle of the world. I actually got Anya to laugh in there for a second.
Did you?
Yeah, you made me shake my head too.
but you did laugh.
It was in there, yeah.
Okay.
Is the earth really flat, or would cats knock everything off?
This guy gets
wow.
it.
That's good.
Genius.
That's good.
See, well, I also still want a cat though.
You do? You want a cat?
I want a cat so bad.
Would the cat get along with Bandit? That's what I'd like
no,
to know.
Bandit. Okay. Bandit is a big bad hunting dog, right? He'll chase down a live goose, a wounded goose, does not matter. He will retrieve it, bring it back to me. Great, grand, wonderful, right? See, the cat, 2 blocks away, his tail's between his legs.
He's scared
of cats.
He's
terrified of cats.
I have a recurring dream in my life about cats attacking me.
What?
I like cats. They're fine. But I literally struggle in my head to get past that recurring dream of them where they come, they attack me and they bite me in this little soft tissue between my thumb and my finger.
And then you turn into Catman?
No. And then it gets like infected and blows up. I have that's like a recurring dream of my whole life about cats.
That's so bizarre.
And we haven't even said hi to our 5 loyal listeners, the Kennedy clan in Oconomowoc today.
She's probably laughing at you, too.
Hey, Robin.
Does Robin have cats?
No, Robin does not have cats. She doesn't strike me as a cat person, though. But then again...
Do I strike you as a cat person?
No, I mean, I don't know.
What is a cat person?
I'm always kind of surprised by... a lot of people have dogs and cats together. Yep. Yeah, dogs and cats living together. It's anarchy.
Mass hysteria.
Mass hysteria.
Cats, what about like a mountain lion? I want to go mountain lion hunting.
Oh, I'd love to go mountain lion hunting, but you've got to be very physically fit for that. I had my appointment with my cardiologist today.
Oh.
And he said I'm good to go to keep hunting and keep getting out there and getting exercise, but he did also agree that I still need to lose weight, which I completely agree with. I grew up Catholic, so I've got Catholic guilt about, like, I love eating because I come from an Italian family and I love cooking and cooking wild game. But then I love eating and then I feel guilty about eating. So how do you balance that?
You feel guilty about
eating? Yeah, but I eat and then I can't stop. I love eating. I'll just keep eating till I'm stuffed. But then I feel guilty that I ate too much. Huh. You can't lose weight if you have to go to bed.
Portion control.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's my point exactly. I'm only human, Danielle, for goodness sake.
Or just hunt a little further out. Burn it off. That's how
now,
I justify
now
it.
Now you're
hunt
talking,
a little more.
Cassidy.
That's how I justify
hunt a little
it.
Further away from base camp.
Yeah. There you go.
Cassidy, what is one of the... Do you call... Are you a caller? Do you call your predators in when you're coyote hunting?
Oh, yeah. You got to run that Fox Pro. And then...
What do you find is the most effective call?
It depends on the season. So in the springtime, a really good one is the puppy in distress.
Oh,
no matter what?
He means a coyote
the
puppy.
The coyote puppy.
He doesn't mean like a dachshund. Okay, Danielle?
It's not a...
People.
Don't give. Why do I see a dachshund in this? Like some miniature breed, you know?
A little Pomsky out there in the field.
God.
A little Pomapoo who doesn't, like, in a sweater.
Oh
shaking,
my God.
Because it doesn't have its.
Oh my
its
why is
treat,
this turning so
its
sad?
Begging strip.
Can we please go back to
He's talking about running a coyote pup in distress, because when that happens, the female, the moms, their instinct kicks in and they come to that call. And you know.
So what time of the year do you run a young coyote call?
Springtime.
Okay, so I'm not hunting in the springtime for coyotes.
Well, you're not using an actual coyote, Danielle.
It's a machine
it's
with
a
remote.
Machine.
But my imagination, oh. Man, I tell you.
But what's inside the machine?
A palm seed.
Seven little puppies.
Seven. Now the smallest ever Fox Pro with seven miniature actual puppies inside. I mean, come on. Oh, my God. Oh, okay. And for the record,
palms
I think
are
this,
sweating.
I'm sweating from laughing so hard. And Anya, I think, might have shaken her head more at you this show than me. So that might be a record also.
I'm not mad at that. Oh my gosh. Okay, then.
Cassidy, what do you think? What do you think of being on the show for the first time today?
I think I go get a Pomsky now. It might work better than the Fox Pro.
What if we just try a cat?
So you run the distress call in the spring.
Yep. And then most of the other time run like a cottontail. Or some sort of food. Most people don't know that coyotes are omnivores. They're like,
sure.
They're like bears. So winter time is best to hunt them.
Winter time?
I agree.
Yep.
Oh.
Well, their coats are the most full, too, which, I mean, I believe in utilizing what you kill. And I think a coyote rug or a coyote, you know, hat or jacket, I mean, that's really cool fur.
Yeah, hand muffs. Really
yeah,
cool.
They're
oh,
really
cool. Oh, that sounds
cool.
Warm, comfortable.
Yeah.
They definitely need one of those for ice fishing.
Yeah,
ice hunting.
They have great... great fur to make things. And one thing I want to point this out, how much time we got left, Anya? 1 minute and
ooh, wait,
one and
what do you
minutes.
Do with them afterwards?
We usually give them to a buddy's parents and they make, you know, big mittens
sweet.
And stuff like that. And you can get like Texas mounts with a skull and kinds
oh,
of stuff.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. Oh yeah. They make beautiful mounts. Actually, their fur is unbelievable. But I also want to remind people, we're not out there just killing to kill these things. Mm-mm. Because Wisconsin right now is on the verge of having too many coyotes, and those populations are damaging other wild game populations. So they do need to be kept in check, and they're growing at an infinitely fast rate. In fact, I just saw last week video footage of a game camera that had a coyote with a killed domestic dog in its mouth.
Ugh.
And so that's very common. It's happening
all
every year in Wisconsin. They're attacking
mm-hmm.
house pets. So you are definitely contributing to conservation in here when you are hunting those coyotes, Cassidy.
Yeah, they have no natural predators other than cars and us.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, what a great week again. Danielle, I want to thank you for filling in. Anya, thanks for yeoman's work doing the producing for all these shows and laughing at, I mean with us.
Broadcasting to Waukesha at 101.1 FM. Broadcasting to Southeast Wisconsin at 540 AM. This is The Shaw, WAUK. This is your hometown radio, refreshed. Keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
You're listening to The Shaw, WAUK 540 AM Jackson,